CliffCentral.com.
Hello, welcome back. Wednesday it is. Yeah, so we've had a couple of just live issues. So please be assured there is about 18 people. It looks like a rugby match is taking place in our control booth right now. No one's been punched yet, but I think it's getting quite physical.
Are you waiting for that?
Not really. I just want our live listeners to feel that we are taking care of their needs. So we're going to soldier on.
Okay.
And there's no better way to do it than with my buddy's news.
Ah. Okay, so let me take you through a bit of a highlights package, if you will, of some of the more important things that were said in Parliament yesterday while the opposition tried to get the president impeached, which, as we all know now, did not happen. It was not successful. They did not get the required votes. We will begin with the Democratic Alliance's Musi Maimane, because the DA, after all, were the ones who brought about this motion. So let's just remind ourselves of some of the things that Musi had to say yesterday.
What you are saying, Minister, is that all the current ANC leaders are corrupt, and some are just more corrupt than others. Speaker, nobody in the ANC is immune from the cancer of corruption. And so today, when ANC MPs defend President Zuma and his corrupt acts, they will show that they were all complicit in the spread of the disease. Because in rallying behind President Zuma, ANC MPs confirm what we already know, that President Zuma is not the cause of the disease, he's merely the biggest symptom of the disease. And even once this tumor is removed, another will pop up, and the disease will spread until every last cell is corrupted. Speaker, this is no longer the organization that produced leaders like Albert Luthuli, Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu, Nelson Mandela, and Ahmed Kathrada. The ANC has been reduced to what Thabo Mbeki called an ignoble, blood-sucking, and corrupt parasite.
Ooh.
Yeah, spot on, huh?
Wow.
I mean, you know you're going to get a powerful reaction when you bring in the names of the stalwarts, right? Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu. And can you just imagine what these men would be thinking if they were alive to see what is happening in the ANC today?
Yeah, that's where everyone's mind goes to. It's horrifying, really.
Now, I found this interesting because, you know, justice often says to us that, you know, you have these two factions within the ANC where you have the Zuma supporters and then the anti-Zuma supporters. But I mean, if Musi Maimane's speech there is anything to go by, the entire ANC is now, you know, infected by this tumor, this cancer, he says. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just all very depressing, I think.
Gareth, you with us?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out whether this line is any good or whether we've been able to sort out some of these problems, because it's irritating if you can't hear me properly.
Yeah, we've got about 100 people.
Sounding all right?
We've got about 100 people working on the issue, Gareth, working on the problem currently. So it is being seen too.
Yeah, Gareth, we're just going to soldier on. The podcast will sound fine. We're just dealing with a bit of live listenership issues.
I read Ranjini Moonsamy in the Daily Maverick after yesterday's parliamentary goings-on, and she had some interesting things to say. She said that the DA might have been hasty in rushing to table this motion of no confidence in the president because it didn't allow them to individually lobby ANC members. She seems to think that might have been a better way to go, or to have started a subcommittee that could have investigated the Constitutional Court's findings and blah, 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 the other processes that could have been followed. But she also says that the ANC is at its weakest point at the moment, and it seems incapable of self-correction, which is a much more interesting insight. I would be interested to know how those meetings within the ANC are going right now, because We're not surprised by the way the DA brought this motion. We're not surprised by the EFF's reaction. We're not even surprised by the fact that the ANC have closed ranks behind the president. What is surprising is that the ANC is not able to charter a way out of these muddy waters. I don't think they know what to do. And I don't know who's taking the lead in the ANC at the moment. Is it Gwede? Is it people within the president's, you know, camp of sycophants? Who is it exactly who's in charge there right now? And what's the direction that they're going to push into? Because that will determine whether this goes very, very badly or whether it gets better from here.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but wouldn't this also be the perfect opportunity for the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa, to be more vocal? Because he has been very quiet since the Concord made their ruling, and then shortly before the top six did their media briefing after the president had delivered his apology on Friday, the secretary general had to shut down rumors which were alleged on social media that Cyril had apparently asked the president to step down. And we have not heard from the deputy president. I think that's just odd.
Well, he's hamstrung, you see. He doesn't have enough support within the ANC as it is at the moment to be able to force the president out. He doesn't have enough strength behind him to be able to pull off something that big. He certainly has the ANC in Gauteng behind him. I think that there are isolated pockets within the ANC who would support him. But I also think he's got issues of credibility here because he's been part of this administration. It's happened. The worst excesses of this government have happened under his participation and as part of his watch as deputy president. So I don't know whether anyone in this top six has any credibility at the moment.
Now, earlier, Gareth, you mentioned the Deputy Minister of Justice, and so he got up to speak after Musi Maimane. So let's listen in on that.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Honourable members, the motion is brought in terms of Section 89(1) of the Constitution that the National Assembly may remove the President on the grounds of a serious violation of the Constitution or the law. So there are set legal requirements in the Constitution for such a motion. It's not a motion of no confidence where there don't have to be any reasons. The DA in their draft resolution claim that the President seriously violated the Constitution by instituting parallel investigative processes and failing to implement the Public Protector's remedial action. But here's the issue. The Constitutional Court judgment stated that the President failed to uphold, defend and respect the Constitution. In the order, they stated that his conduct was inconsistent with the Constitution. But the Court did not find a serious violation, as Section 89(1)(a) of the Constitution requires. There is a difference, whether the DA likes it or not, between an inconsistency and a serious violation. In fact, the EFF specifically wanted the court to declare that the president violated his oath of office, but the Constitutional Court did not declare this. Nor did the court declare that the president had perpetrated a serious violation of the Constitution or the law, committed serious misconduct, or has shown an inability to perform the functions of office. And it is only on these grounds that Parliament may remove the President from office. So it is the DA and not the Constitutional Court that is saying the President committed a serious violation of the Constitution.
Okay, so the Deputy Minister of Justice there saying that the Constitutional Court said that the President failed to uphold the Constitution, but nowhere did they say that he actually committed a serious violation. So you could argue that, I don't know, Mr. Deputy Minister, are you trying to split hairs here? Is this just a matter of semantics? Because it's almost as if he was trying to say that the President didn't actually do anything seriously wrong. To which then Julius Malema got up afterwards and then had this retort.
You say a person has failed to uphold his oath of office, it means that person has failed to uphold, defend and respect the Constitution. You can't say a person has not breached his oath of office and therefore EFF did not get what they asked from the Constitutional Court when the court said this person has failed to uphold, defend and respect the Constitution. That is an oath of office. So once you fail to do that, no one can argue, not even a Deputy Minister of Justice, that you have succeeded. You didn't uphold, you didn't respect, you didn't defend the Constitution, but you have succeeded in upholding your oath of office. That doesn't make sense. The judges were clear that the president and this parliament engaged in an unlawful activity. And we cannot behave as if the court has not pronounced itself. Now the court has made it very clear who messed up. You want us to continue as business as usual. The Speaker of Parliament doesn't get removed. The president remains. The legal advisors of the president remains. Even after that constitutional court, no single individual has been held accountable. And you want us to believe that you are protecting the Constitution, you live by the rule of law. We are all equal before the law.
Look, it wouldn't be a parliamentary session that we are completely and entirely used to if there wasn't a bit of a scuffle that broke out. And so this is exactly at the time right at which the scuffle then happened while Julius Malema was still talking.
We are all equal before the law, and including Zuma, he must be President equal Zuma before the law, because if the court finds order, that he has violated the Constitution, order, he must be subjected to the rule order of law.
Yes. Order,
now,
Malema.
Honorable Malema. Inconsistent.
Honorable Malema,
order,
you take your seat. Yes, what are you rising on, honorable member?
Can I just sit down, please? I want to just raise the order.
Hey, man, I'm not going to sit down.
Down,
man.
Sit down, all right?
Sit down. He must speak. If you don't want to speak, I'm continuing. Now, the inconsistency of the Constitution is equal as the rule of the Constitution.
Honorable members,
you cannot be inconsistent of the Constitution and want to tell us that you are behaving in a right
manner. Honorable Malema, I've asked you to take your seat. Please do so, sir. The rules of the House, Honorable Malema, the rules of the House apply. Please take your seat.
Tell that one not to tell me to sit down.
Take your seat.
I beg better to members.
So the issue here was that an ANC member stood up because he wanted to say to Julius, please do not refer to the president as Zuma. You must call him Honorable.
At this point, is that the most important thing?
Yes, yeah. Gareth. Protocol is key. At that point, when Julius Malema was trying to explain that the president did in fact commit a serious violation of the Constitution, it was imperative that he referred to the president as Honorable President Jacob Zuma and not just Zuma.
Oh, please. We've moved. I mean, this is so childish. This is like your house is on fire and you're concerned that someone isn't calling you by your right name.
Again, you know, we need to decide on a list of priorities now as a nation. We need to decide what is the number one most important thing on this list of priorities and focus on that. We can't keep getting distracted by all these other things that are not as important. So, yeah, that's basically what happened in Parliament yesterday.
Sure. I feel exhausted listening to that.
Listen, you want to talk about feeling exhausted? How about feeling depressed? Because apparently 25% of workers in this country suffer from depression and plea for understanding at work. One in four working South Africans suffers from this, and this is according to a specialist, a psychiatrist, who says that the latest studies show how high the burden is. This has a massive impact on our workforce. because it means that essentially a quarter of people in the work office are having difficulty concentrating at work. They're indecisive. They're forgetful. Of those, of the 25%, half of them have taken time off due to serious symptoms that manifest as a result of the depression. And they're absent for about 18 days a year. And then this cause, of course, then causes a knock-on effect on the economy, because it means that you've got people who are not productive, first of all, because they're suffering from depression at work. And then secondly, you've also got people who are missing a lot of days at work. And so this also is affecting the economy.
Yeah, it's a genuine illness. It really is. Yeah. It needs to be dealt with as such.
And it's difficult because, you know, if you're an employee reporting to someone, that person that you're reporting to has their own stress levels that they're trying to manage. So another big problem is that superiors and managers and bosses are finding it very difficult to be sympathetic to people who say to them, you know, I'm depressed. And they're like, well, what am I supposed to do? We're supposed to keep this machine running. So it just causes this cycle of ineffectiveness and non-productivity and, you know, for serious cases, people then who end up taking their life.
But then like Patty with IBS and accounts, I mean, she's been clogging up the budget for 2 weeks. She can go home whenever she wants and have more milk tarts.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Patty. People have got to be more compassionate towards these kind of things, because it's shown around the world and has been for years now. It's not just someone just taking – look, people always take the piss in life, unfortunately. That's how the system works. People find loopholes.
Yeah.
But it's a legitimate illness. It really is.
Do you think it's being taken seriously enough in South Africa at least?
I don't think so, no. I think the fact that you still find people are ashamed to talk about their mental illness suggests that it's because there's either – a lack of understanding or a lack of empathy. And so people usually just go about their business and suffer in silence and suffer alone.
I think it's because also now the term just, oh, I'm so depressed, is used so lightly these days. It's like, oh, well, I'm having a sort of bad day, so now I'm totally depressed. Ben, what are those gestures? What are you trying to say?
Oh, yeah, no, you do often, you being the very dramatic person.
I don't sound depressed.
You've once or twice said, oh, guys, I'm so depressed. And then we just kind of ignore you.
See, if the Wi-Fi goes down for 3 seconds, you say I'm so depressed.
Something important. People don't take depression seriously as a mental illness. And I also heard a couple of reports yesterday in light of our interview with WHP. Some of the more prominent publications saying, you know, there's still this idea that depression is a white disease, or that it's a luxury disease that the middle classes get, and that it isn't real. Poor people have depression just as much as rich people do. They just don't know it necessarily because they're not diagnosed with it, because they can't seek mental help the way that they'd seek physical help if they were sick. And that's because of stigma and because of the fact that it's still taboo in some communities to admit that you have mental health problems.
I agree with you, Gareth. Also, the fact that some people who are suffering from depression and might not be aware of it, and then they hear you complaining about depression, they're thinking to themselves, what are you bitching about? I mean, if I can soldier on and go about my business knowing that I have such a difficult life, what is your excuse? Stop whining. There's this thing about people who suffer from mental illness. You know, the association is that, oh, you're whining, you're complaining about something that isn't a real problem. Like, just pull your bootstraps up and go about your business. The rest of us are doing it. What's your excuse?
Yeah, you can go with that positive reinforcement, but then it's also like actually understanding what the problem is. I think this is where the problem lies generally.
Yeah.
Well, we have a call on the line. Sean, I think he wants to comment on this. Sean?
Morning, guys.
Oh, there we go.
Hello, Sean. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Yeah, super. Thanks. What's happening?
Go ahead, Sean.
Listen, I watched Robin Hood last night with Russell Crowe, and I couldn't help but get a bit nauseous and just see this country in that movie, because in the movie, they basically go and he supports the King of England, and they fight the French and they win the war. But before they do, you know, he sort of speaks to everyone and say, you know, this is what we want and this is what we want from the King, and the King agrees. He says, yeah, no problem. You know, everyone will work his own land and won't be paying so much taxes and whatever. And then they fight the battle and they win the French, and the King turns around and says, well, It wasn't his choice to be king. God made him king, and it's because he's of royal blood. So he turned around on the agreement, and I couldn't help just seeing our own country in this movie. The difference here is, though, that with Zuma, we made him king, so to speak. And he's not of royal blood. So the only way I see this country going anywhere is when election time comes and we can make a real difference, and we can, you know, vote for the right guys, if there is such a thing, the right guys, because you never know. But yeah, it's depressing. I think the whole of South Africa is sitting today in a very depressed sort of state because of what happened last night.
Yeah, spot on, Sean. I think we are feeling in the same boat considering all the messages that we've been getting. But it is. It's like, I think it's just a general ruralist sentiment. Eh? I mean, Gareth will know a lot more about this through various forms of history. But throughout time, most leaders have been complete dickheads. And that's why I find that whole Iceland story right now fascinating, because what a contrast that some people still have conscience in life. And it'd be great if we could somehow move to that.
But Oak is so arrogant, and for the country not to see it, he even made his apology on the 1st of April, April school day. So he's a real fool, yeah. Fucking ass. Anyway. So I'm going to go have a beer now.
Oh, but Sean, yeah. It's not even 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, how bad is the depression, Sean? I'm a little concerned. All right, Sean, you have a good day.
Sean, you sound like a responsible adult. You do what you think is best.
Yes.
The beard is.
Tony's totally good behind God. You.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanks, Sean. Just looking at the messages here, Adriano makes a good point. Are we able to see who voted for who yesterday in that impeachment thing? And if so, Adriano really wants to know, where does Cyril vote? Well, look, I think they all voted for their jobs. Adriano just put it very, very bluntly. Cyril voted for much of the same.
Pretty much, you know, again, as I said earlier, if the president were to have been impeached, that means that his entire cabinet, so everyone that he appointed, would have to go as well. That's just the way it works. Yeah. And so when you're sitting there as a minister and you think to yourself, then do I really want to risk losing my job? And then you just kind of decide which side of the bread, which side is buttered on? What's the saying, somebody?
Look, I think these oaks are living in a world of French toast. There's so much butter going on here. There's not even a side anymore.
I know. It's French toast and croissants and baguettes and all the good stuff.
Yeah. Mubs, can we move away from politics now?
Okay, sure.
I reckon we should make that step. Look, we are all in the same boat here. And if we can give you any sort of therapy, then join us every morning, because we'll do that. Maybe we should have a rule on the show. South of 7:30, we'll do politics.
Okay.
After that, we need to look at other life. So, you know, it's really expensive to live in England, right?
Even
if you're earning pounds, it is so expensive to live there. Now, a study's been done where they look at the average, what it costs per day to live in England.
Okay.
To work out in rand, because let's be honest, just put it there. It'll cost you around 2,050 rand a day to live in England in a standard.
2,050 rand
a day, like standard flat living, right?
Wow,
that is crazy.
Now, if you were to have a cabin on a cruise ship, you would pay about 1,800 rand a day.
Oh my word!
You do the maths, right? Ooh. It's cheaper to live on a cruise ship than it is to live in London. Obviously, to a certain level.
Well, can you do a calculation on the monthly cost then, if it's 2,250 rand a day?
Okay,
I'm just trying to figure out.
This is involving if you living in a flat and you're paying for food, basically what it costs to live. You know, they all go up in this country, so we all know what they are. If you were to be full board on a cruise ship, about 1,870 rand a day, full board at home in London. 2,050.
So that's 61,500 rand for 30 days.
Okay. That's your average month of living, okay?
And what's a pound? What's the exchange rate now?
It's about 22.
So let's divide that. So you basically need about 2,795 pounds a month to live in London.
That's just to get in the game, right?
But
now, the cool thing is, if you live on a cruise ship, you've got amazing chefs cooking for you every day, right? You live a life of buffet.
Sure.
You've got all these amazing bars you can get hammered at.
You've got laundry services.
Yeah. You've got activities.
Yeah.
Great view.
You've got, you're moving around exotic places.
Yeah.
If you can somehow work with an internet connection, right? Why wouldn't you just go live on a cruise ship? Just imagine being in London and it rains like 8 out of 7 days there. It just rains.
8 out of 7,
and everyone
okay.
is congested. It's horrible most of the time.
Yeah.
You get 3 hours of summer, whereas you can live on a cruise ship for less money if you can somehow just consult over an internet connection.
Wow. And the nice thing about it is because these cruise ships run over a length of time, once they get to the end of the leg of that particular cruise, you would just then hop onto a different ship, which is resuming a brand new destination.
Exactly.
So you'd also get the opportunity to live in different parts of the world because you'd basically be jumping from one cruise ship to the next.
And the people you'd meet. I mean, we sit in South Africa and we meet South Africans, but if you live on a cruise ship, you're going to meet people from all over the world every single day.
Well, Michael, if you're sitting in your flat in London, you'll meet no one.
Mm.
I mean, if you
you'll meet Paddy with IBS.
You'll meet the tax man.
Well, you're not really meeting Paddy. You're forced to work
Paddy
with
him. Paddy will be plugging up your bodger again. So what a cool thing. I mean, there's no, like, the study goes on to say that the cruise industry has gone up 9% last year, right? It's becoming a very attractive thing for people to retire on. And here is the catch of cruise ship living. You'll be around old people that smell of pee.
Oh.
Now, back in the 90s, an elderly woman called Beatrice Muller, obviously Beatrice, have you ever met anyone south of 80 called Beatrice? So Beatrice Muller, okay, 86. She lived in the QE2. That's the Queen Elizabeth, the big Cunard ship, right?
Okay.
She lived in it for 8 years.
Wow.
Until the boat was retired. They had to kick the old bint off eventually. She would have died on that boat if that boat was still in commission.
And what's wrong with that?
I think it's brilliant.
That's a life.
Just imagine old Beatrice. She's thinking, screw this. I'm not living in a flat. I'm living on a cruise ship. And a lot of people are doing this nowadays. They're actually spending their retirement to live on cruise ships. Just live.
Wow. That is interesting. And why wouldn't you as a cruise ship? It's like running a kind of property rental service, essentially.
Great. Huh?
As long as they can keep paying you, there's no reason for you to kick them off. Why did they want to kick Beatrice off after 8 years?
Yeah.
Sounds to me like she was a loyal tenant.
Well,
she paid on time.
But the thing is that the boat was going out of fashion, so it needs to kind of go into something else.
Oh.
But they are so well equipped for old people, these ships, because they have so many on them, right? So they've got staff. If you fall over, you're having a bit of a bad day, there's someone who'll be helping you around. They'll wheel you to the buffet. If you're at home.
They'll wheel you to the casino as well.
But just think of this as well. When you're old, right, and you're at home and you've got terrible children, or they've abandoned you, or you've got no kids, you wait around waiting for them to bring you some Meals and Wheels crap dinner. Whereas here, they'll wheel you to like the sashimi counter. This is such a no-brainer. If I ever become old and completely useless, I'm just going, right, cruise ship, take me.
The more we discuss this, the more I realize it's really not a cuck idea at all.
Look, you just have to, if you're somebody who suffers from motion sickness, then it obviously is a cuck idea.
Okay, true.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, where these cruise ships are most prominent, they're on good cruising waters. You know, we had this conversation a while back that the waters around this country here in SA,
very choppy.
They're not for cruising. They're not for cruising. They're for getting seasick in. Whereas if you're in the Caribbean, you're in the Mediterranean, whatever, cruise away. Old Beatrice there, 8 years, her priorities for the day were, and I quote, ballroom dancing and playing duplicate bridge.
Yes, yeah, Beatrice.
That was the only shit Beatrice had to give was being on time for bridge.
Yeah. And, you know, ballroom dancing is a great form of exercise because you've got to keep that going. You've got to keep that up.
Can you imagine the man fish that Beatrice was pressing daily?
Oh,
she would never
okay.
go that
okay.
Suit you.
She was a saucy old minx, this Beatrice.
You know, every time they dock somewhere, she knows that there's fresh meat coming on board.
Someone olive skinned.
Yes.
If she were to grab someone's ass back living in a flat, they'd probably be thrown in jail where she can grab the purser or the captain's bum every day.
Shame, I feel bad for her boring life now.
Yeah. No, she had a good time
towards the end. So if you feel like you're paying a lot in big cities, consider the cruise life. It's something to really think about, huh?
Well, here's a story that's just so wrong and frightening in so many different levels. An employee has been found dead inside Disneyland Paris's haunted house ride.
Uh-oh.
Just already picture the visuals of this is meant to be the happiest place on earth with kids all over the place.
Except for in the haunted house.
Exactly. So the body of the 45-year-old Disneyland Paris employee was found inside the theme park's haunted house on Saturday. Now, according to Sky News, the worker is believed to have died by accident. accidental electrocution while working on the Phantom ride before the park opened. So at least it was before the park opened, so there were no kids around. Disneyland, in a statement, said, "We are truly saddened to learn from about the passing of our cast members, and our hearts go out to his family and friends during this difficult time." But the park has been closed, while the Phantom Manor, the haunted house rather, has been closed while the police investigate the death. But this is actually the second death at Disneyland Paris, because a little while ago before, another employee was trapped underneath a boat on one of the rides as he was cleaning it, and they were dragged along the tracks while the ride was switched on.
So
the happiest place on earth, right?
I was about to say, you're at Disney, can't claim that anymore.
Two employees dead.
Unless you die.
Although, if you think about it, there's plenty of opportunity for people to have accidents or hurt themselves or even die at a place like Disney with, you know, with their theme park. All that machinery, all the like the nooks and crevices and the different corners that, that have been structured there. There's plenty of opportunity for a lot of things to go horribly wrong.
Just this employee with the electrocution? Yikes.
I went on that ride, the haunted house in Disneyland Paris. You probably wouldn't even notice there's a dead person. It is so scary, that ride. You have those things popping out of nowhere. You see like half arm limbs everywhere. They take you six stories up on like this, in this cart thing. And then they just drop you story by story by story. And things like pop out at you, and I swear to God, I would have walked past his dead body. Wouldn't have noticed a difference.
Now, that's the thing. I'm not trying to make light of his passing. You know, I'm sure it's very sad. Not even, I'm sure it is sad. But it's a haunted house. It's not like Cinderella's castle where you could have pinpointed a body quickly. Haunted house, they're like fake corpses all over the place. Imagine if they didn't find him in time.
Well, exactly. It would have, it would have made the whole experience so much more authentic, because it was an actual, real dead body in the haunted house, except, you know, instead of mannequins or whatever it is that they use.
Can you imagine that ride now? Everyone's going to go on that. The lines must be incredible.
Would you?
Yeah, if you go there, you go, "Yeah, I went to Euro Disney." You go, "Did you go to the place where the guy died?" You can't say no. You go, "Yeah, of course I did."
Yeah.
I would want totally to stay the hell away from that.
And can you imagine the debate around the topic itself? Because, you know, some people would be saying, "Oh no, it's just some kind of PR exercise. They want you to think it was a real dead body, but it really wasn't." Yeah. And then other people would be saying, "Of course it was a real dead body. It was in the news, man."
That sucks.
There'd be like a whole debate going on around the situation as well.
I was actually talking to someone, well, this is like a couple of months ago, who works for Disneyland in Hong Kong, and they were just visiting South Africa for a while, and they were telling me how tight of a ship Disney runs overall. You know, if you are meant to be Cinderella and you stand there, you cannot not smile. And if a girl who visited you as Cinderella during the day sees you at a restaurant later on at night, they expect you to be Cinderella. People are fired just like that because they're out of character or they are not portraying that image of Disney. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, look, it's kind of par for the course though.
Yeah.
That's commitment to a job. If I am at a bar and I want to have a drink, I want to have a drink. I'm not Cinderella anymore. I'm Margaret. So yeah, leave me alone.
Thing is, she must go to bars because kids can't get let into bars.
Okay, true.
Yeah.
If she starts hanging out at Dunkin' Donuts afterwards and still in a dress, I mean, yeah.
That's not her fault. She hasn't changed. What is she supposed to do?
It's all part of the franchise. I mean, Disneyland makes more of selling little costumes of Cinderella inside than they probably make of the ticket price for the park. You have everyone running around with those bunny ears, everyone cotton candy, stuff like that. It's all about the vibe, keeping it. They have fake snow. It's unbelievable, the vibe inside.
When did you do this, Michael?
When I went to Europe in December.
As in like this last December now?
Yeah, so it was...
So it's pretty fresh in your
they
mind.
They made fake snow. Every hour they had a parade going around with that chick from Frozen. Every little five-year-old was running around with a Frozen wig on. It's a multi-billion dollar franchise.
Do you remember how much time you spent there? Because I can imagine that hours and hours and hours could easily go by being in a place like that.
So there's two parks there, and the one park's broken up into different theme sections. I spent the whole day there, and I probably got through half the park.
Yeah, you kind of, if you got kids, it's like a week, but it's a week of stress.
Yes.
Can you imagine? I mean, I reckon the wine sales in that area, with being France, obviously must be sky high. Can you imagine, like, kids going, right, I can't see another, like the parents, I can't see another cartoon character and I don't care about you anymore. And they put them to sleep and they get hammered.
I don't understand how parents host birthday parties there.
Oh, I admire them.
It is.
The stress.
They are to be admired, though. And can you imagine if you have more than one child and you're there and then this one wants to go to this ride and then, no, this one wants to do the other thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, can you just, we'll get to them both. Can we just maybe do it in turns? And they're like, yeah! Because that's how kids communicate.
Now, as I think it back is, in retrospect, my parents shipped me off to my aunt's with no kids for all of those theme park visits. Like, never went with my parents and I'm seeing it was actually
smart.
Like a smart move from their side.
Very smart.
One of the attractions at Disneyland is a meet and greet with one of the, like, chicks from, what's it, Let It Snow?
Frozen. Elsa. The movie's called Frozen. The song is Let It Go, not Let It Snow.
She'll be, like, behind a curtain, and you get to take a photo with her. And the line for this is ridiculous. And then you'll have, like, Mickey Mouse will appear in the park. You'd think Justin Bieber just walked in. Everyone starts running to get photos with Mickey and Minnie Mouse.
See, like, if you're smart and you want to do this, right, you've got to be behind a mask. You can't have your face shown because it's cool when you're Mickey Mouse and kids run up to you for, like, the first hour.
Yeah.
But you just know, inside of the mask on, like, a Sunday, it's going, oh, you little fucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that one's grabbed my leg again. Oh, yeah. You little I reckon there's so much depression in this as well.
And also, because you have all these different rides and you've got kids eating candy floss and sugar popcorn rushed. And they're sugar rushed and then they get onto these rides and then they get off and they're puking all
How
over the place.
How much puke is all over the place? How much urine is all over the place?
I think we need to go broadcast some Euro Disney.
Oh, now that I think about it. Oh, yeah, I would be, I'm sorry, I would not be able to work there. I would not be able to put on, no, not okay. at all.
Well, would you rather go to or work at the Pooh Museum?
Yeah. Okay. Sounds rewarding.
Yeah.
That's a shitty job.
Okay, calm down.
So corny, that is bad.
A newly opened museum in Great Britain is promising to get to the bottom of bowel movements. Yes, this is a real thing. It's called the National Pooh Museum. It opened last week. Visitors can see excrement-oriented exhibits such as feces from more than 20 different animals. Why? Is the question. Why? Why do you want to see excrement from animals, including elks, lions? They've got human poo. They've even got fossilized poo dating back to 140 million years.
How is this being displayed? I mean, are they like Homo sapiens and then there's their poo next to them? And they're putting
in the
these
squatting
faces?
Position.
They are encased in these glass objects.
Is it
okay?
Just the poo?
It's just the poo, Ben.
So not even in situations.
It's just the poo, and from the pictures that I'm looking at here, they're all encased in these glass objects, so you know, it's see-through, so you can see, and then you can also pick the object up, so that you don't have to touch the, well, it's encasing the poo, so you don't have to touch the actual poo.
But is it real, or is it just like replicate poo?
No, Ben, it's real poo.
So how do they preserve it?
Because also including fossilized poo dating 140 million years. I don't know
Has
how
this been
they,
a hit?
Well, it's just opened, Sia. The museum opened last week. So there's a guy called Nigel George. He is one of the crap curators. Yes, that's now an official job description. He says the reason for doing a museum dedicated to poo is simple. He says poo provokes strong reactions. Small children naturally delight in it. But later we learn to avoid this yucky disease-carrying stuff, and that even talking about poo is bad. But for most of us, under the layers of disgust and taboo, we're still fascinated by it. Yeah. I mean, how engrossed were we in Ben's conversation about the squatty potty,
side note on that one, the squatty potty is like $600. I went to the plastic store and I got two steps of 50.
So
same thing.
They're officially selling it for 600 rand.
Yeah, you're buying a brand, aren't you? But I mean, we all are. We don't want to admit it, but we all are fascinated by poo.
Well, this is what this crap curator says. He says deep down we're all fascinated by poo, and that is why they opened the museum.
Trust me, if you get a step in your life, you become more fascinated. But then you live healthier.
Well, I just now want to see Nigel's business card. Like, how does he send it out with confidence? Like, hi, my name is Nigel. I'm a crap curator.
I don't know, Sia. But you might be wondering, oh, why would I want to go to the poo museum? Obviously, it's going to smell rank.
Yes.
But to make sure that the museum's poo doesn't stink, the curators built a special dung dryer. So that takes care of the...
See, now, I was going to ask, because, like, if you put a fresh stool into something, there's heat coming off it.
Oh.
So you're going to get, like, poo condensation in these little caskets.
There's heat. Oh.
The National Poo Museum will be at the Isle of Wight Zoo through the summer, their summer. So I suppose it will be, like...
Our winter,
before going on tour. So the museum is going to go on tour. They're planning to travel around the world with all this poo, displaying it. And so hopefully the poo museum will make its way to South Africa and then you can go.
I really
want to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, come in.
But here's the thing. There is a weed museum. There's a sex museum. So this shouldn't be a surprise that there's a whole poo museum now.
What other museums should there be? Is there anything else we've missed?
There's a museum in Amsterdam, Museum of Prostitution.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
They take you through what happens to the girls, how it starts out. They take you through some real life stories, stuff like that. It's pretty fascinating.
Did you go?
Yes, I went. It's like behind the scenes of the prostitution, like how much the girls charge, the fact that you have to have a valid, European passport and you have to be over the age, I think, of 21 in order to actually pay, like, use a prostitution. Is that the right term?
Use a prostitute. Use pay for the service.
Yeah, pay for the service.
Engage in prostitution.
Yeah. And then there's some horrifying stories of, like, bad ways prostitution ended for certain girls. Very fascinating to go see, like, the other side.
Was Liam Neeson there looking for lost girls?
No. But you do get some fascinating... They must make, like, a Kardashian museum.
No, they must.
Because that is the most messed up family right now. Did you hear what happened?
Do tell with your announcement.
So, Big Fat Rob just got engaged to Blac Chyna.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Blac Chyna is the baby mama to Tiger. Tiger's dating
Kylie Jenner.
So, that makes Kylie's boyfriend the uncle... of how's this even work? So, Blac Chyna is now the aunt and the sister-in-law to Blac Chyna's baby.
No, not the aunt. She's the mother, right?
Wait, okay.
She's the mother, but she's now also the aunt because she's now married.
Because she's going to be the sister-in-law.
Yes.
Oh.
Who does that?
The Kardashians. Like, it's going to be in season 13.
Soon there is going to be incest in that family.
If there hasn't been already. I'm just saying.
Season 20, as they go into the White House when Kanye is president. So that's what they're going to do.
That kid's probably like, nah, I got a good... My dad at least didn't turn into a woman overnight.
Shame. Just leave grandpa / grandma. Bruce/Caitlin.
What more could go wrong in that family?
Judge, trust me, if you give them enough time, something will go wrong.
A few more seasons.
Well, Lamar's also back and he's drinking now. So Lamar, after his whole overdose a couple of months ago, he's now been spotted drinking. So that's also another little...
Soon he'll be back with the strippers.
He's an addict. I mean, this is what happens to addicts. They fall off the wagon every now and again.
Do you want to hear about a worse family though?
Yeah.
Is there a worse family?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, I know. Sarah Palin's family. Am I close?
No. Arnold's family? Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, it's a family that I'll probably just like tell you about right now. It's a guy called Heath Campbell, right, in New Jersey. And Heath is famous for being a Nazi. That's Heath's thing in life, right? He's got a full body covered in Nazi tattoos. Mm. He's basically just used his body as a canvas towards Hitler's things.
Mm-hmm.
So now he came to news about 8 years ago. When a cake shop basically said, no, we will not write happy birthday Hitler on a birthday cake for you.
Oh, okay.
Any guesses why he was wanting happy birthday Hitler on a cake?
Is he celebrating Hitler's birthday?
Did he want to send it to a Jewish person that he really, really has disgusting personal feelings towards and thought it would be a practical joke?
No.
Please don't tell me he named one of his kids Hitler.
Well done, Sia. Because he's named his son Adolf Hitler. Now, his name is Heath Campbell, right?
Yeah.
His children's names are Eva Braun, Heinrich, and Aryan Nation.
Oh,
he named his son Aryan Nation.
Oh, dear. Oh,
so where the story gets a bit better, though. All his kids have been taken into childcare.
Good luck getting a job.
Well, exactly, Michael. It's a good point, because if you name your child Adolf Hitler,
no,
what's going to happen?
First of all, on his first day of school, he is going to be terrorized and beat up so badly that he's not going to want to go back.
Even during History Month in school, he's going to be beat up.
Will he make it to see History Month at school?
There's a documentary going out about this freak show. It's called Meet the Hitlers. And this guy, so he named his kids Eva Braun, Aryan Nation, Adolf Hitler, and Heinrich.
What's his belief? Does he really...
Yeah, this is where it gets even more sordid. He genuinely has the beliefs of what Hitler's saying. He says, I have different beliefs. I believe in whites living with whites, blacks with blacks, Spanish with Spanish. I don't see anything wrong with it. Says this guy with Nazi tattoos all over him. He says that he came home one day and his kids were just taken. He says that I did nothing wrong. My kids were not abused, but I couldn't even say goodbye to them. It's like, yeah, but you've named them Adolf Hitler.
They're abused from the start.
Aryan Nation. They've got no future.
Yeah.
But all these crackpots, they believe their own hype and their own shit so much they believe it's okay. His kids were taken away from him.
And the mother?
She's... Yeah, kind of just not in the picture anymore.
Yeah, you see, those children, as soon as they're old enough to do so, should all change their names legally. That is the only way, actually, to rectify the situation.
Well, hopefully now in foster care, that kind of the steps are already in place.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just sad.
And at least they got taken away at a young age that he can no longer, like, put things in their mind.
Well, these exactly. This is the thing, is what kind of poison is he feeding his kids as, you know, as he shapes and molds them into adults? Are they also going to grow up thinking that, oh, well, whites must only be with whites and blacks with blacks?
But Hitler took it a step forward and he killed these people who were not like him. So it's not like, oh, yeah, let's live in peace. Peace, love, and harmony just separated. He killed these people. So what message are you trying to convey in this? No, stupid.
This man must be on some watch list, because if he's starting to view Hitler like that, then wouldn't he follow in the actions of Hitler?
Yeah, you just got to wonder. Like, I know attention is what most people want in life, and they never got it from their parents, or they were never talented at anything, so they've got recognition. But this is just sad.
No, but
it's
there's
nothing more than sad.
There's hogging the microphone at the karaoke evening at your local bar on a Thursday for attention. Then there's naming your kids Hitler. There's a different.
Yeah.
Anyway, but speaking of swastikas, did you guys hear about Donald Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Oh, yes.
So that's now, they're in discussions of actually taking his star away because there's constantly some sort of person coming through and defacing it, whether they put a swastika on it, someone spray painted on a mute sign on him. There has been like these allegations of like people intentionally bringing their pets to also like have a little bowel movement on the star. So they're like, let's actually save ourselves
people
all of this
time,
drama,
you know?
And take the star off. Do you think this is fine? Do you think, you know what, he deserves a star? He got it back in 2007 anyway for his work on The Apprentice.
It's a stupid star in a on a paved walk.
But if they're doing this to a stupid star, what will they do to the White House?
Oh my goodness, I didn't think of that.
You know, the White House has that fence, basically. You can see right through. And, I mean, in times gone by, if someone's died or it's been a tragedy, flowers go to this thing. Imagine what people will do to that fence.
People be throwing, like, rolls of toilet paper to the White House.
They'll be throwing wigs on there.
Toothpaste.
There'll be a lot of poo.
You see, this is where I am curious as to how differently people think, because I'm just wondering to myself, what would it take for me to do something like that? To actively take my pet and say, you are going to take a dump on this spot right here because what? Because you're thinking, haha, it's funny.
Yeah.
Or is it because you hate the person that much? Are you just looking for a little bit of attention? I mean, is it a practical joke thing? What's going on here?
I think it's real dislike.
Do you know how stupid these stars are that I can go apply to have my name on a Hollywood Walk of Fame in a star if I have $30,000? I can go apply and be on the waiting list.
No,
of course, but
you go and apply for it. It's $30,000.
No, but the big stars don't apply for it.
No, even big stars. I read here the main reason why A-listers like Julia Roberts and Dustin Hoffman don't appear on the Walk of Fame, they're not interested. All-star applications carry a $30,000 sponsorship fee.
That's ridiculous.
I didn't know that. I thought these stars were awarded to these people, so they pay for them.
I remember when, who was that guy? He was just in the news now in the WWE.
The Rock?
No, the guy with that white beard.
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. I remember in one of his series, his daughters were trying to get him on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and then they tried to raise $30,000, and they managed to, and then eventually he got on there.
Well, granted, I guess then the prestige comes with the waiting list. So even if Joe Soap does have $30,000,
but I mean, you can
if Jennifer Lopez comes along, she'll get one before you.
You can be on that waiting list, have paid $30,000 and never get it and just die. And you just That's go, how they make their money.
You just go around Hollywood bars telling people you're on the waiting list. That's going to be your angle.
So then does that mean that next to Jennifer Lopez's star, there will be a random star of Michael Flex? A non-celebrity.
I probably won't get approved on the waiting list.
That's why I'm saying the prestige probably comes with the waiting list.
But to get on the waiting list, you have to pay $30,000.
But I'm definitely assuming that Trump is going to make a big thing out of this. It's a whole ego thing.
Watch him employ like Secret Service to around his Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
I'll not be surprised.
Sure. Okay. I'm a little bit exhausted after that. Listen, if you're wondering, because we had a few problems with the internet and with our IT stuff here, we did lose Gareth along the way. Yeah, we lost him.
It was Mike in the South Coast.
It was Mike, yeah.
Oh my gosh, Mike got to him. Yeah, but Gareth, we'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 in the morning. Coming up after 8 o'clock, pop singer and dancer Munewa spoke to Gareth. She talks to him about what it was like for her growing up in extreme poverty. She was raised by a single mother. And how she has since traveled the road to success. So we've got that interview lined up for you after 8 o'clock this morning. And then what is it today? It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
Yes. So my brain, it's fried. Lots to look forward to in terms of the rest of your lineup. Frankly Speaking, Womandla, Animal Central, The Football Show, Auto Central, The Capital Wrap Up, and then Kelman on Cliff Central. So it's how we do here on Cliff Central. Another jam-packed day for you.
Something we also do is we let you pick the music from time to time. And what a bad idea this is going to be covering.
Why?
Okay, well, look, I do appreciate this. Lindsay sent Mike an email saying, "Hi, Mike. My song is Strawberry Kisses from Indecent Obsession. It's the first concert I went to back in the day. And whenever my neighbors have a party, they play it. Good memories." Lindsay, I love the sentiment behind that, but we're going to get some abuse for this song. We will. But you know what, Lindsay, that's what it's about. So here's your song. Sia's got it. If you do have a suggestion for a song, you're welcome to mail mike@cliffcentral.com. But from today, the screening process will be severe.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio. Cliffcentral.com.